Contributors to Wisconsin Public Radio include J.W. Jung Seed Company, Wollersheim Winery, and Rockweiler Insulation. You too can help ensure the future of WPR with your business sponsorship. Find out more at wpr.org/sponsor. Support also comes from The Hostel Shop in Stevens Point, Wisconsin, committed to helping people rediscover the joy of cycling with recumbent trikes and a comfortable, efficient, and easy riding experience. More at hostelshop.com.
Fasten your seatbelt, turn up the radio. We're going on a road trip.
Winter's over and the snow is gone. Go get your gloves and pull your work boots on. Gotta clear that patch, pick them stones. You know the sun is gonna warm those lazy bones. Winter's over and the work's to start. Time to get busy in the family garden.
It's time to get busy and get outside on Route 51.
Turning the soil and planting the seeds. Laying down mulch and pulling up weeds. Pulling the corn, row on row. Then you stand right back and you watch it grow. No, even little children gotta do their part and help to grow in the family.
I'm Glenn Moberg, and today on Route 51 we take our annual sojourn off the highway and down the well-trodden path to the family garden. That carefully tended, deep black soil, the seeds placed in shallow rows, the tomato and pepper plants forced to make the transition from the grow lights to the sunlight, and the promises of beautiful flowers, a harvest of homegrown vegetables, and a yard filled with trees and ornamental shrubs that are all healthy and thriving. And that's all easier said than done, as all of us know who have tried to grow things during the brief summer respite in a climate where the frost comes early in September, the snow is piled deep by December, the temperature drops to 30 below zero in January and February, and the ice doesn't break up until May. Growing things in northern Wisconsin is a challenge, and with us today are two master gardeners from Portage County who can help us find our way. Nick Schultz writes the Perpetual Gardener column for the Portage County Gazette. Lynn Kane is an orchard owner who sits on the Wisconsin Master Gardeners Association board and who served for several years as the summer horticulturist for Portage County UW Extension. They're both here for the rest of the hour to answer your questions live on the air and give you advice that's tailored just for us who live in the frozen tundra in the northern half of our state. Well, we've got wide open phone lines right now, so you can get right in. And if you've got gardening or landscaping questions, you will find that it's easier to get through on this show than on Larry Mueller's Garden Talk show with its statewide audience. And the show certainly works better when you call in. Our lines are wide open. Here's the phone number, toll free, at 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. If you've got gardening questions, what to plant, how to keep the plants healthy, how to keep your trees and shrubs healthy, what to do if the trees have been girdled, what about insects, what about organics, what are the new techniques for gardening? This is your show for the next hour, 1-800-780-9742, or you can put a question on the Route 51 Facebook page, and I will read it live on the air. Nick Schultz and Lynn Kane, thanks so much for being with us today.
Delighted to be here.
Exactly what is a master gardener?
A master gardener is a trained volunteer through UW's Extension. We take 36 hours of training initially and then make the commitment to volunteer at least that amount of each year. So the first year is a little more when you do the class, and then each year it's I believe 10 to 20 additional hours of education and volunteering.
And Lynn Kane, you're on the Wisconsin Master Gardeners Association board. What exactly is that?
That is a statewide board. There is, for each county that has a Master Gardener Association, sends a representative that represents their county. Then we have district directors, which is what I am, so we're on the board. So I probably have all the counties that are in central Wisconsin would be part of my district. They tell me what they're experiencing problems with, or I disseminate information from the state to them. And so it's just kind of a way to connect all the counties and get information out and to receive information back.
All right. Sounds good. Now, you also spent several years as a summer horticulturist for Portage County UW Extension.
Yes, that was very much like this show. I had people call me. They would tell me what the problems were in their gardens, with their trees, with their lawns, whatever. And then I would do the research to give them the answer as far as solving the problem.
All right. Very good. Why don't you tell us about your orchard?
We bought some property up north. The orchard is probably 100 years old, and many of the trees were dying or had been in disrepair because no one had been taking care of them. And so we went through and saved the ones we could, and then we're grafting the heirloom things that are left onto new rootstock to save the genetics of the heirloom apples. So it's quite a project.
All right. Fantastic. And Nick Schultz, what got you interested in gardening?
Well, I grew up on a dairy farm and was gardening from a very young age, when about the only thing we could plant were glad bulbs. And so I had very fond memories of peeling those in spring and setting those in the garden and getting the spacing right then for the corn and the beans and the string on two sticks to make sure your rows were straight. Those are some of my earliest memories. So it was it was fun to have my own space to continue that.
And you've also got your own space in the Portage County Gazette.
Yeah. Yes, I've been doing that since 2003, and it's just a fun way to share information and also to learn new things.
And that's the Perpetual Gardener program. Perpetual Gardener column,
yes.
In the Portage County Gazette.
And I say it like that because when you love to garden, you never really stop thinking about it. Whether it's the excitement of the spring, the summer planting and tending your garden, the fall harvest, the winter planning, it's a perpetual love.
All right. Dear listeners, we invite you to call in at 1-800-780-9742. We had some computer problems for a few minutes, and we had about 3 phone calls that we lost, so we would like to get you back. The computer problems have been fixed. 1-800-780-9742. If you've got questions about growing things and problems you're facing outdoors, what kind of vegetables to grow in our short growing season, questions about flowers, trees, shrubs, 1-800-780-9742. Let's go right to the phones. We've got Scott in central Wisconsin. Scott, you're on Route 51 with Nick and Lynn.
Hi. I got a question regarding apple trees. I have a couple on my property, and they have, like, I think it's oyster scale. It's on the limbs and on the branches, and I can't figure out how to get rid of it. I've tried different things, and it just seems to stunt the growth of the plant, of the trees, and I don't get any apple production or nothing. Do you have any ideas that I can do?
Why don't we take the orchard lady with this one?
And scale is very difficult if that's truly what it is. The first thing I would do is make sure that that's what it truly is. Scale are insects that they look like little bumps that are on the trees, and they have like a shell over them. So if you're trying to spray or anything, you can't penetrate that shell. And then when the shell opens and all the babies come out, then that's the time that you want to try and find something. Now, they do make pesticides that the tree will take up, but of course you don't want to use those if you're going to be eating the apples. But you might want to try that 1 year just to get rid of the scale, get rid of all the apples, don't eat them, and then, you know, you would go forward from there. But the biggest thing would be that you want to make sure that you really have scale first of all, and there are times of year that they would be able to tell you exactly when to put a pesticide on in order to get rid of them.
Do you know what that pesticide is?
It would be specific to apple trees. So they have, a lot of times it's an oil that maybe goes on in the dormant season. So that would be something like early spring you might put it on. It's called horticultural oil, but you have to be very careful with those oils because they will damage any green foliage. So you would put it on when the trees are dormant. There are other summer oils, which are much lighter, that can go on when there is foliage on the tree. It would be something that you would want to specifically know what oil you're using, what time exactly to put it on. So it's a timing thing and a specific thing. So it doesn't necessarily have to be a heavy pesticide. The oil itself would smother out the scale if that's specifically what you're dealing with.
Is this common? Because it seems I haven't been able to get rid of it.
Scale is an odd thing. It comes to certain years. It seems to be very bad depending on the weather. Other years, like a winter we just had, a lot of times they freeze out because the insect's shell can't protect them when the temperatures get very, very low. And that's why, I originally said, you want to make sure you're really dealing with scale and not something else. You know, specifically, you could send a sample into, the UW Extension or bring something in, a little piece of the branch that it's on, so they can specifically tell you what you have before you start going to all the trouble to make sure that that's really what your problem is.
Okay, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
All right, Scott, thanks so much for the phone call. It is the Route 51 Garden Show with Lynn Kane and Nick Schultz, 1-800-780-9742. They are answering questions about gardening and horticulture and problems with plants and vegetables and trees and shrubs just for our North Central Wisconsin climate, our inclement climate. We do have wide open phone lines right now. Now, typically with this show, the lines fill up toward the end of the show. If you want to get through right now is a real good time. 1-800-780-9742. These ladies have a lot of expertise to answer your gardening needs. Or you can just leave a message on the Facebook page, the Route 51 Facebook page. I'll read it live on the air. Again, that's 1-800-780-9742. You can get through right now if you want some free advice for your gardening questions. We are coming off one of the longest, coldest winters in recent memory, more than 30 below zero at times, snow on the ground from December until just a few weeks ago, ice still floating in Lake Superior on Memorial Day. I don't know if you've seen the pictures. How is this cold winter affecting the spring growing season?
You know, it's one of the most obvious things this spring has been the amount of winter burn on perennial, or excuse me, evergreen shrubs, especially the yews and some arborvitas of the dwarf spruces all are brown, and we've received a lot of questions about those things. And so I would suggest that people continue to watch them, look for some new growth. Don't chop them down just yet. Watch for new growth, because if it does come, it can push out some of the dead leaves, and hopefully you won't have lost those plants. Keep in mind that notice that the trees that didn't brown, those are your natives, and those are some of the strongest plants to weather severe Wisconsin winters. So many of our pines did fine. Our the white spruces are native, so those tend to weather it a little bit better.
So it's a question of trying to plant things that would grow up here naturally instead of maybe pushing the envelope.
Yes, that's true. Or if you love something and you want to do it, then be prepared to take some precautions to keep it growing. So extra mulch, some people wrap those evergreens to keep them from burning in the winter.
Watering into the fall, because as long as the ground isn't frozen, the evergreens are still taking up moisture. And so you want to be sure that they're very moist once the ground freezes, because the winter burn comes when the cold air comes through and dries them out. So they're actually dried out. And so if they're nice and moist and healthy before the ground freezes, then they have a little bit more of a fighting chance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's the Route 51 Garden Show, 1-800-780-9742, 1-800-780-9742. Let's go to Claire in Baraboo. Claire, you're on Route 51.
Hi, Glenn. I hope you don't think I'm cheating by calling from Baraboo.
are you listening to us on WHAA 89.1 FM?
Yes, I am. I get a great signal down here from Adam.
Well, if you can hear us, you're not cheating.
Right. Well, thank you for that. Yes, that's exactly the issue I was calling about, the dried out yews, arborvitae, pine trees that I have even down here in Baraboo. And it's so weird because it's not all of them. It's very spotty. And the pine needles are not crispy. They're so very pliable, but they're solid brown. And my question is, should I just let nature take its course, or should I chop all the crummy looking stuff off?
Well,
I'm looking at a baby pine right now, for example. It's about 3 feet tall maximum, and all I've got for green is the very tip top.
Right. And so, what you want to remember about evergreens is that if you cut off a branch, it's not going to grow a new branch. So when you're pruning, if you're chopping parts of it out and there's holes, that's the way it's going to look. Because the most evergreens only kind of grow from the ends or from a bud on a branch. So if you're chopping whole parts out, say like a big glob of it is really dead and you cut that out, well, then it's always going to have a hole there. So it's very difficult, especially on a dwarf spruce that doesn't have a lot of growth. If you're cutting big parts of it off, it's not going to look right. And so that, therefore, it would probably be better to just, you know, if a over 50% is dead, you might as well pull it out and put a new one in. And again, like Nick was saying, find something that's going to be able to take it, or it's just going to do the same thing again the next year.
Okay.
And that's true of all evergreens, even mature ones. People like prune them and they cut parts out and then there's a hole. And so that's always going to be a problem. So you have to always remember they don't respond like a hardwood tree would or something like that.
Okay, so now I just turn to the other end of my yard and I've got one of these very tall but kind of scrawny cedar type plants or trees. The whole thing is brown. So is that a goner? More than likely.
If you're not seeing any new growth in the next week or so, are you zone 4 in Baraboo?
Yeah, I think so.
Borderline. Yeah, I suppose four.
Yeah. But I've seen winter burn in Madison and Milwaukee too this year. It was really a sunny winter. So if you're not seeing any new growth in the next couple of weeks, then you might want to start with something new.
Okay. Thank you so much.
You bet.
Claire, thank you for the phone call. And again, 1-800-780-9742 for your gardening and horticulture questions on the Route 51 Garden Show. Because of the harsh winter, Nick and Lynn, a lot of trees suffered girdling damage from rabbits and deer looking for food. If you've got a tree that's been, say, partially girdled, what can you do?
The best thing to do, if you're seeing green on the top, it's still alive. So that's a positive thing. Some of them were girdled so badly, and they were girdled up 3 feet up the, and it's just completely chewed, and now it's dead. It's dead. It won't. You've killed all the living tissue that was the outer parts, and so the tree is now dead. It will not come back. But if it's greened out, and because there's some life still going through that trunk, then the best thing to do is just leave it alone. Because trees heal themselves. You know, people used to spray them with tar and do all that. And it's actually better not to do that.
Oh, no, that's what I just did. I've got a Honeycrisp tree.
Mm-hmm.
And it was girdled bad. I mean, all the way around, like 2 feet
right.
up.
Right, yes, yes. That
but
was
it
very
greened
common.
Out on top.
Beautiful.
I don't know how that's possible.
Right.
All the bark was stripped away, you know, all the way around it. So I went to my local Ace Hardware store, and they gave me this spray,
the tar.
And then I wrapped it.
No. You should. So, the tar's on there. You're just going to leave it now. Don't wrap it. You want airflow to go through there because the air and the sun are what's going to heal that. That tree is going to repair itself. But the thing I will tell you is get some fine mesh fence. Put a ring all around because it's going to be a target. And again, make it 2 feet, you know, ring it. And that you can leave on all year because it has the mesh, so the airflow will go through and all that. And I would recommend that to any homeowner that have small fruit trees, cherries, some of the plums. That seems to be what they really target.
Right.
And they were, yes, very, very bad this year. And they were starving. I mean, they had nothing to eat, so they were eating your shrubs.
And because the snow cover was so high,
yes,
they went up
they
a
went
lot higher
up.
Than
yes. Yes.
Than normally, you know, you usually put that plastic stuff around the mm-hmm, trees in order to mm-hmm. keep them free during the winter,
right,
and
yes.
and boy, they
and,
could get right up
right.
above it.
Well, up north, we even had them chew through the plastic. They were so hungry, so it was very, very bad. But yes, if, as long as they're greening out, now you might see later in the summer that might, you know,
yeah.
it might not make. But I, so it's a watch and see again, because girdling is very, very damaging to trees.
We had a very late spring, but could that be a blessing? We had some years where spring came early and the apple trees started flowering only to be hit by a hard freeze in early May.
Yes.
It's the consistency of the temperature that is really the biggest factor. Yes, you're referring to, I believe it was 2012 when we had
right.
80-degree temperatures in March, and then by May we lost a lot of the flowers on our fruit trees. And Lynn can certainly speak more to this, but that consistent warming is much healthier. Yeah. Quite frankly, even as long as this winter was, we had good snow cover. That ends up insulating plants from and protecting some of your perennials from the freezing and thawing that otherwise might cause
Very
them to
true.
Heave and die. So
yes.
Well, let's go back to the phones. 1-800-780-9742. If you've got questions about gardening, growing things, horticulture problems in our inclement northern climate, 1-800-780-9742. Judy in Stevens Point, you're on Route 51.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I had just an absolutely horrendous infestation of buckthorn. Anyone listening probably knows it's me talking to you, because I've sought so much advice on this. I did have the buckthorn, the large ones, removed. I'm left, however, with millions of seedlings, and they're underneath evergreen trees and also mixed in with perennials. One area does have no perennials and lots of buckthorn. I still can't get back there to mow. And I have a gentleman helping me with my garden chores, and he's suggesting that I spray Roundup on that area. I'm concerned about doing that because of the evergreens above. So I wondered, you know, do we have to hand pull every one of those, or any suggestions for me?
The thing is, if you want to spray Roundup, the Roundup specifically has to touch something green. So if you have evergreens that are mature or whatever, they're up above. You could even put a barrier around their trunk, so when you're spraying, the spray does not touch. As long as it doesn't touch anything green, it
yeah.
will not affect them. So if you just like had a patch, say of a 6-foot by 2-foot patch of buckthorn, and you just want to specifically spray that little patch, it's not going to go through there and then go up to the tree. So it's just going to touch what is green.
Yeah, that's. I was afraid of damaging the roots.
Right, and it generally won't go into the roots unless you specifically put it. Like, a lot of times what they do is they'll cut a stump, and then they'll paint the right onto the stump, and then it'll go down into the roots.
And
but
we did do that, that was successful.
Right.
But, of course, there were millions of seedlings.
The seedlings, right. And the thing is, with any kind of invasives, it's a multi-year process.
Yeah, I'm afraid
so. Yes, and that's what's really – but if you let them all come back, then you're going to be right back where you were. So if you stick with it – and the other thing is, what you want to do is, when you eradicate, you want to replant. So get something in there. Get something – some
right.
kind of grass with a very heavy root system, or something that will take up that space – so that it will shade them out so the seedlings don't germinate, or it will compete with the seedlings, or, you know, that type of thing. So get something in there, heavily seed it down with some kind of a grass or something that can kind of choke that out. And then you'll also have a much more successful eradication.
Okay.
I would also add too that if you can pull them out when they're seedlings, it's much easier now to just do it by hand. Once they get to be tree or shrub size, you have to chop them down and you have to use chemicals to really kill it. But while they're still small, you can pull them out. And Lynn is so right about planting something else there. Nature abhors a vacuum, and you get the most. Most of the invasive problems that we have are construction sites and other places where nothing has been growing, so the invasives take over.
Right. One more question.
Real quick, Judy.
Okay, I do like to mulch, but I think that the mulching really wasn't as effective. Do you have any thoughts on that?
It would depend on how thick the mulch. I mean, you could really put a heavy pack down if you really wanted to drown it out. But your best thing is to plant something in there that will put down a root. It'll be there all year round, and it will really take up that space.
Okay, very good. Well, thank you so much,
Judy. Well, thanks so much for the phone call. 1-800-780-9742. It's the Route 51 Garden Show, an annual tradition here at Route 51 with two master gardeners, Nick Schultz and Lynn Kane. We'll be back with more of your questions. Carolyn Wausau, you hold on right after this short message.
Ain't nothing in the world that I like better than bacon and lettuce and homegrown tomatoes. Up in the morning and out in the garden, get your ripe ones, don't get a hard one. Plant them in the spring, eat them in the summer. All winter without them's a culinary bummer. I forgot all about the sweating and the digging. Every time I go out and pick me a biggin'. Homegrown tomatoes, what would life be without homegrown tomatoes? Only two things that money can't buy, and that's true love and homegrown tomatoes.
Thank you to the business sponsors who help support WPR programs. Businesses like D.B. Reinhardt Institute for Ethics, Access Prosthetics, and Gimme Shelter play a huge role in the success of WPR. Your business can too. More information at WPR.org/sponsor. Support also comes from Greenwood Hills Country Club, Wausau, helping the community one round at a time with Make a Difference Mondays, a day open for all golfers to enjoy a round of golf while benefiting a Wausau area charity. Details at greenwoodhillscc.com.
Yes, you like potato, and I like potato. You like tomato, I like tomato. Potato, potato, tomato, tomato.
Let's call the whole thing off.
Oh, yes. You like potato,
and you like potato.
You like tomato,
and you like tomato.
Potato.
As Louis Armstrong and Ella Fitzgerald bring us into this segment of the Route 51 Garden Show, I'm Glenn Moberg. You can get free advice from two master gardeners for your horticulture and gardening questions. This show is designed especially for our inclement northern climate. 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. Or you can put a question on the Route 51 Facebook page, and I will read it live on the air. We've got some websites that I'd like to share with you. www.hort.uwex.edu. Nick Schultz, what's that one?
That is the urban horticulture website for UW Extension, and has a great source of all kinds of horticulture, landscaping, vegetable, fruit, flower tips.
So that's hort.uwex.edu, and then there's a learning store, all one word, learningstore.uwex.edu.
And that has all the publications that have been written by the Extension. Some of them you have to purchase. Other ones you can download for free. And again, if you have a specific problem, you can look it up in the category, and then it will show you their research and what they've found is the best methods to take care of it.
Let's go to the phones. Carol in Wausau has been waiting patiently. Carol, you're on Route 51.
Hi. This winter, we had a large birch tree trimmed up and... well, we were out of town when we had it done. When we returned and spring came, the tree started weeping this sap, lots of it. But the side of the tree that, let's see, it would be the west-facing side, started pouring out this orange stuff that it looked like it was going to form bunions along the side. And when it finally stopped, it's left a swath of blaze orange in its path on the tree. And I have never seen that anywhere. And I wondered, is the tree going to die? Was it damaged due to the cutting, or what is that?
I think what that is, it's a specific disease. What happens is when there's ooze or there's bacteria in a tree, it will turn bright colors like that. There are, as it reacts with its environment, that's, again, one of those things you would have to, you could contact, again, your extension office. They would specifically know what is going on with that birch tree, how much damage, and whether there would be a way to treat it or not.
Okay. All right.
The thing is, a lot of people will kind of take a wait-and-see approach. Again, trees are very good at healing themselves, but it's hard to say if this has been that heavily damaged or it's oozing a bacteria. Obviously, then it's got some pretty serious problems. Your extension office certainly would have the specific information on what you should be doing.
Okay, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
All right, Carol, thanks so much for the phone call. 1-800-780-9742. Let's go to Penny in Wisconsin Rapids. Hello, Penny.
Hi. I had a cherry tree that had girdling problem in the spring when the snow melted. And I just wondered, not the whole thing was girdled, just about 2 inches was left. Could you graft bark onto there before the tree woke up in the spring?
What they do is they call that a bridge graft, and they do that. What they do is they take a sucker, which would be a very young piece of the cherry that was growing off a branch. They clip that, and then they do make a bridge between where the lower part of the trunk would be and any live tissue. So you're trying to create that live bridge for the nutrients to come up, the water to come up, and that it's not that easy to do. You would have to maybe go on the internet, do a little research exactly, because you don't want to damage it anymore by cutting holes and doing all this. But that is what they do with trees that are girdled, especially commercially. If you have a very expensive tree and it's been girdled all the way around, they'll put several of those bridges in, and that can be a very effective way to save a tree. And you're right, you do it in the spring before it comes alive.
Is it too late now?
If it's already budded out and it's already growing, it may be too late. But it might be, something, again, if you go online and you're reading about grafting, they may have some other suggestions about, how to do it now,
Okay. All right. And one other thing is, can you know when you buy a tree if it's been treated systemically with insecticide?
There wouldn't be any way to specifically know that. You would have to ask them what their policies are. Certain nurseries make a point of telling you they don't treat their trees because they know that that's what people are looking for. So you'd look for more of a natural supplier. Mm-hmm. Probably anything that comes in from a big store or a big area, a lot of that stuff is being shipped in from down south, so it possibly would be treated or have a different makeup. So you would specifically look for a local nurseryman who knows exactly what he's been doing, growing his own products, and then he could tell you specifically what he has or hasn't done to them.
And, that's important for a couple of reasons, Carol, because trees and shrubs that are grown in zone 3 and 4, where we are right now, the agriculture zone, are much more likely to be successful in your own yard because they are used to our conditions, and that's how they were raised, and they'll continue to thrive.
Penny, thanks so much for the phone call. 1-800-780-9742. If you'd like to join the conversation, we have two master gardeners with us on Route 51 today answering your horticulture and gardening questions specifically for our inclement northern climate. Or you can put a comment on the Route 51 Facebook page, which Matt did, and he says, I've had problems with tomato blight the last few years. Is there a variety that is less susceptible, and does watering play a role?
The answer is yes, watering does play a role. There's no absolute resistance to the blights, but there are cultivars that do have some tolerance. So they call it Flora America. There's La Rosa, Mountain Supreme, and Wisconsin 55, which is a heirloom variety that do have some resistance, but that, you know, that doesn't mean that they are, or I should say they have tolerance, but they don't have resistance. So, which means you might have a better shot at it. But actually with the blights, the biggest thing is that you want to not grow your tomatoes in the same area. So you're rotating away from that area because the blight will stay in any kind of matter that has overwintered. The other thing is the watering. Tomatoes, you want to keep the foliage as dry as possible. So you're not watering with a sprinkler. You're not, you know, when it gets, you know, you want to water at the base of the plant. Keep it off of the foliage. The other thing is the blights usually start from the soil. So even if the soil's splashing up, that's what's causing it. So what you want to do is prune off those lower leaves as the tomato matures, and then that gives you that space of airflow, and that will help to keep the blight off. A lot of people put newspaper, straw, all kinds of things around the base of their tomatoes to keep that splashing down, because that seems to play a big role in your early blights that can come in like that. So,
interesting, interesting. Yeah. And you say you have to keep the plants dry. Now, I always heard that you can't water tomato plants in the bright sunlight. You know, you'll burn them out. That's what I've been told. But apparently, if I understand you right, Lynn, it's getting them wet that's a problem, not necessarily watering
it is.
When it's sunny out.
Right, right. And again, if you're taking a bucket and just pouring it at the base of the plant, some people even make a little hole where that's their watering hole, so it just goes right down to the roots. But the biggest problem we have with blights is when we get these humid days, because we're not necessarily watering them, but there's humidity in the air. And so you get those foggy mornings, or you get those humid mornings, the heavy dews. Then the plant is wet, you know. And so you want to, again, have lots of sun to burn that off as soon as the sun comes out to keep that plant as dry as possible.
Hey, there's another problem that you get with tomatoes, too, blossom end rot, which has some of the same characteristics as blight, but that's usually caused by a calcium deficiency.
It is caused by a calcium deficiency, but it's also caused by fluctuations in watering. So you might have plenty of calcium, but it's really dry. And so then you give it a whole bunch of water, but then it gets really dry again. So you're not having consistent water. And so tomatoes like to be consistently the right. So like every day, you maybe give them a bucket of water to keep that consistent. Again, it goes back to the mulching. Oftentimes, if you mulch around a tomato, you'll keep those roots kind of consistently moist or consistently wet. And so it's not going from dry to wet to dry to wet. And that causes a lot of blossom end rot. Now, they do make some foliar calcium sprays that some of the commercial tomato growers, because they don't want to run the risk of ever having blossom end rot. And so that is something that you can buy. But mostly it's just making sure that you're consistently watering and not allowing them to get very, very dry and very, very wet.
Now, you can get more varieties of tomatoes now than I think you ever could before. You've got catalogs like the Tomato Grower's Guide, which is out of Florida, and something called Totally Tomatoes, which is put together, I think, by the Jung Seed Company. Mm-hmm. You've got literally hundreds of hybrids and heirlooms from all over the world right now.
Right, right.
What are the drawbacks and advantages to heirlooms?
Heirloom tomatoes, what they did when they hybridized things, they tended to breed out the flavor. So they were breeding for disease tolerance, high yields, beautiful plants, things like that, but they weren't necessarily breeding for flavor. So some of the newer hybrids, they just don't have the flavor. It's not like, you know, we remember biting into a... So when you go to the heirlooms, you get that flavor. You get a variety of flavors. There's different heirlooms. Some of them are greenish. Some of them are yellow. Some of them don't even really look like a tomato like we imagine a tomato. But the flavor is just fantastic. But then you're running into the disease problems. They're not as hardy. Maybe the yields aren't as high. So it's again, maybe they take a lot more care because they haven't been hybridized to solve those problems.
Another advantage with heirlooms is you're maintaining the genetic diversity
yes.
of different plants. So yes, there are a lot, but they also do give you, preserve those seeds and those who, heirlooms are basically, you are true to seed. So when they talk about open pollinated, it basically means that if you grow something, you say you pull out the jelly with the seeds in after you harvest them, set that aside, let it kind of do a little science experiment. And then then next year when you plant those seeds, it will be the same. Now, if you did that with your hybrids, you wouldn't really know what you got next year. So you can maintain it. There's some real family ties. So people are really proud that they have maintained seeds of peppers
grandma's,
and tomatoes.
Grandma's tomatoes and that sort of thing.
I had a guest on this show a couple of years ago, and I was talking about the disease resistance of hybrid tomatoes, and he said, well, wait a minute. These heirlooms have been around for hundreds of years. Don't you think they've got disease resistance if they've lasted that long?
Right. And when we're talking about, like we were just talking about early blight, the hybrids aren't really resistant to that either, you know. So
you mentioned,
it's cultural.
You mentioned Wisconsin 55. Now, that is one of the great central Wisconsin, I think all of Wisconsin, tomatoes. And it's considered a more recent heirloom, I believe. Mm-hmm. Brandywine is another one. It's very common. It's an heirloom. People love it. That's the one that's like two. Each tomato is like 2 pounds and one slice will cover a sandwich. You know, they're wonderful. there are some great attributes and with tomatoes that are pretty mainstream too in terms of
where you can find them. That's the fun of gardening. You can go talk to the guy down the street who's been growing tomatoes for years. You know, that's where you get a lot of your information because they're growing in this region with our variety, you know, and so they really know, you know, you have to plant them on this day. The thing about tomatoes is they like it hot. So a lot of people put their plants in too early, and then that's why they don't see their
You know, there's some people who don't start their gardens until June 10th.
And there's nothing wrong with that.
Well, except we have frost by early September, you know.
Well, everything has what they call a growing period. So when you're looking at tomatoes, is it a 100-day tomato? That means you don't get tomatoes for 100 days? Well, you know,
you're not going to be able to grow it here.
So you're looking for your short day, your early girls, your, you know, things like that that are fast. 60 days, you know, you're going to have tomatoes. Yes, you're very right. You have to look at all those things, you know, because we have a short growing season.
And there are a number of varieties that come from other areas with a short growing season, Siberia, Russia.
Right.
I'm growing a variety. I do it every year called Silvery Fir Tree, which comes from Russia. 52-day tomatoes. They're determinate, which means that they're compact plants.
Right.
And they produce beautiful 4 to 6 ounce beefsteak-looking tomatoes.
Yep.
The foliage doesn't even look like a tomato plant.
Right.
It looks like a holly or something. It's very lacy, you know.
Yeah.
But that time frame is so important.
That's very important.
Because September comes around, you've got an 80 or a 90 or a 100-day tomato plant.
Right. It's not
Those tomatoes are going to be green.
The other thing – oh, go ahead, Nick.
If you haven't bought your seedlings yet – be sure to read the tag, not only for the name, but also for those days to maturity. Often it's between, it can be between 70 and 80 or 85 days. You know, if you're putting things in June because you might be in a frost pocket or whatever the reason, you just didn't get to it because you were in school, then, you know, make sure that you are working backwards or counting forward to figure out what those 80 days are.
Right.
Nick Schultz and Lynn Kane, two master gardeners on the Route 51 Garden Show. If you've got questions about keeping vegetables or flowers, we haven't even talked about flowers today yet, or trees or shrubs healthy, 1-800-780-9742, 1-800-780-9742. We'll be back with more after this.
See that watermelon hanging on the vine? I wish that watermelon could be mine. The farmer must be careless without a lick of sense, or he wouldn't leave it hanging on the vine. Cornbread is sweet, pork chops are good,
black-eyed peas are mighty, mighty fine. But give me, oh give me, I really wish you would, that watermelon hanging on the vine.
Contributors to Wisconsin Public Radio include Stevens Point Area Co-op, Peninsula Music Festival, and Import Auto Clinic. You too can help ensure the future of WPR with your business sponsorship. Find out more at wpr.org/sponsor. Support also comes from Wausau's Woodson Art Museum, presenting exhibitions featuring upcycled couture fashion and fiber arts on view through June 15th. Details about how to repurpose and reimagine everyday items at lywam.org.
Tiptoe through the window, by the window, that is where I'll be. Come tiptoe through the tulips with me.
As we tiptoe through the tulips with Tiny Tim and our master gardeners, Lynn Kane and Nick Schultz, taking your questions about gardening tips. We might be able to squeeze in one more. Only about 5 minutes left of the show, ladies. And I do want to talk about some of these new techniques. We were talking about straw bale gardening before the show. Lynn, tell me what that's all about.
Well, what that is it was designed for urban gardens, but you can also have it in your own garden. You get some straw bales. Be sure that they're straw and not alfalfa hay. So you tip them on their sides so the strings are on the sides, and then you have to condition the bales. You put high nitrogen fertilizer in. You water it in. So you do this every other day for about a week. Then you cut down, but what you're doing is you're getting that straw to decompose, so you're creating your own compost inside that bale.
So you're actually planting things right inside a bale of straw. You're not putting straw on a garden plot. You're planting things in the bale itself.
You are. It's like making your own little mini garden, and then it's, again, we were talking about tomato blight, things like that. People are using it because it's a much more sterile environment. You're not getting the soil splashing. Strawberries and straw. They grow crazy in these straw bales. And then, you know, you can water them. You can, you know, put a little fertilizer, you know, water in. And so you create your own little mini garden. And some people have rows of bales. So you can create a big garden using them too, you know. And so it just makes a, you can go vertically. You can put wire up and then things will climb out of the bales.
Huh.
But it's mostly if you have a problem like with your soil. So if you have very heavy soil, your soil is contaminated. You don't want to be digging, you know.
Well, it'd be great for urban gardening too, where you don't have a lot of space.
Mm-hmm. Right. You could put them right on a cement patio. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, it doesn't, you don't have.
Apartment.
Right. An apartment. You could do that on your patio.
Now, we've also heard about wooden pallet gardening this year. Explain that.
You get a pallet. Again, you have to ask because not all pallets are in the garbage. You know, a lot of the stores have to recycle them, so don't just take them. You have to ask. You bring them home. You look at what's the backside. Will have the bigger holes in it. So you put a few scrap boards on there so the holes aren't too big. But you want to leave some holes because you want water flow. You want air flow. You double up landscape fabric. You put it all around the back and on the bottom. Then you turn it over to the front side, which will have the nice spaced pallets. Then you fill it with not garden soil, which would be too heavy, but more of the potting mixes that are more the soilless type mixes, so they're lighter. You fill it in, you make sure it's good and packed in, and then you plant. You can make a flower garden, you can make a vegetable garden, you can put just about anything. You can leave them flat like a raised bed. Or after, say, 3 weeks, the roots will grow into the soil and hold them in place. You can flip them up, and you have a vertical garden.
Also a big push now for locally grown produce. We see that in Stevens Point with the Central Rivers Farm Shed. Why is local better, Nick Schultz?
Local, we are really proud of the Grow Local movement in Portage County, and I think really throughout central Wisconsin. You know, several years ago, people started growing their own food, I think, because of the economy, and it really has morphed into the benefits of having fresh, local. I can go outside and pick it and eat it, and the taste. I just came across a statistic that I thought was so interesting, that people have gone from wanting to be self-sufficient and reducing their carbon footprint in terms of, you think of food, transportation costs. Now 73% of those who grow their own food cite better taste, quality, and nutrition.
And that's a good thing to leave it on. That's a good reason to garden, because you are producing your own local produce. And ladies, we are completely out of time.
By inch, row by row, gonna make this garden grow. All it takes is a rake and a hoe and a piece of fertile ground. Inch by inch, row by row, someone bless these seeds I sow. Someone warm them from below till the rain comes tumbling down.
We want to thank today's guests, Portage County Master Gardeners Nick Schultz and Lynn Kane. A reminder, you can read Nick's column, The Perpetual Gardener, in the Portage County Gazette. Let me give those websites out again, www.hort.uwex.edu. That's hort.uwex.edu for your horticulture questions. And to find out what publications you can get, check out www.learningstore, that's learningstore, all one word, .uwex.edu. And your insect questions are at entomology.wisc.edu. I'm Glenn Moberg of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks to our executive producer, Rick Ryer, our on-air producer, Jane Ritger. Special music today by Eric Clapton, Arlo Guthrie, John McCutcheon, Tom T. Hall, Louis Armstrong, and Ella Fitzgerald, Tennessee Ernie Ford, Tiny Tim, and John Denver. Reminder to follow us on Facebook. If you missed part of the show, you can hear it again at 7 p.m. on WHRM 90.9 FM. Thanks again for riding along with us today. Forward, as we say in Wisconsin. And until next week, we're heading out of town.